it's super cool to be able to say, create like a country song in the style of Dan Runcie's Trapital. That's interesting that that could even exist in the world.
Hey, welcome to Trapital. I'm your host, Dan Runcie. This is your place to gain insights on the business that shapes music, media, and culture. We dive deep into the companies and moguls who start the trends that shape the rest of the business world. Today, we're talking all about generative music. And we're adding some important context here, because in the past year, there's been a lot of discussion and concern from many voices in music and entertainment about the impact of generative AI and why some people think we may be on the verge of another Napster moment. But to be honest with you, that couldn't be farther from the reality. And to discuss this in more depth, I'm joined today by Jessica Powell. She is the co-founder and CEO of AudioShake. AudioShake is a company that makes audio interactive, customizable, and accessible by using AI to separate sound recordings into their component parts and stems. AudioShake was named one of the 200 best inventions of 2023 by Time Magazine, and the company recently partnered with Tuny to release a tool called BeatSwap that generates new instrumentals to match existing vocals. As an angel investor in AudioShake, it's been great for me to watch the company continue to make partnerships and push this industry forward. So when this opportunity came, with me taking a bit of time off on paternity leave, I wanted to feature some prominent thought leaders that can share some insights on where things are going in the industry. In this episode, we're starting things off with a conversation between Jessica and I, where we talk about this topic and all of its different angles in more depth. And after that, we'll transition into the guest essay that she wrote as a post in Trapital titled, "Is Generative Music Really the Next Napster? Why It's Going to Take a Lot More Than a Text Prompt to Kill Music as We Know It." Here's our conversation. Let's dive in. All right, we're here today to do a deep dive discussion on generative AI music and why this moment is not like the Napster moment. And I'm joined by Jessica Powell from AudioShake. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for doing this thoughtful guest piece that you did in Trapital. We're in this moment now where everyone is eager to compare what happened in the past to what's happening now. Everyone's also eager to figure out this next moment. But I feel like you have a good vantage point because you're someone that didn't necessarily start your career in music, but you're bringing your fresh perspective of what makes sense, what doesn't make sense to the industry, and being able to apply your insights here. And I feel like that's prescient, especially when people are comparing tech disruption to what's happening in music.
If you were to ask me what has most of my career been, or, you know, what was I doing? Like, it has been almost all technology. I've spent most of my professional life was at Google, even though I worked at another startup as well. But actually, the very first place was at CISAC, which is the parent organization to BMI, ASCAP, MCPSPRS in the UK, so all the performing rights organizations. And what was funny was I was working there at the time of Napster. And so it was a funny time because I was young and I was downloading music and I was using Napster. And at the same time, I was working to defend artists' rights and thought that that was also very important while also really wanting my, like, being able to get music. So I was kind of in both of those worlds at the same time.
What was that like? Because I could only imagine that you're living this life experience as a music lover, completely contradictory to what your job is needing to be done. I could only imagine that you're probably not the only person that was working at CSAC or other companies. I was probably in a similar position.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely contradictory, but I think, and part of this was probably that I was young and so forth and didn't see it in such ways. But I guess part of me saw, if we go back to the time of Napster and P2P services generally, why were we using them? Was it to rip artists off? No, right? Like, again, and also particularly being young in the narrow-minded way, at least that I was at that age, I wasn't thinking about the artist one way or another, though if you'd asked me, should the artist be paid? I'd be like, well, of course, right? But the thing, what was it I wanted? I wanted the music that I wanted to listen to, and I had nowhere I could get it. I was living in Tokyo at one point. I was living in Paris at another point. A lot of the music I listened to was American. A lot of it was a little bit more underground. Where was I going to find that music? How was I going to get it? How was I going to get it on demand? There was no place to buy it. There was no place to listen to it. Even when I was in the US, the music I was listening to wasn't on the radio. So what could I do? right? So I would turn to the PDP services, even while I would still be buying if I went to like FNAC in France, or if I was in the US and could go to like Tower Records. All of this kind of coexisted for me. For me, the thing, and I think for a lot of people that were my age at the time, it was like, how do I get the thing that I want to listen to right now? I think you could hold both of those things in your head of course we should support the arts, right? While at the same time being like, why aren't they making this thing available to me? Like, I would have totally paid for it, right? But there was no marketplace. You used products that were meeting a gap, right? That was a gap in the market. And then eventually that gap was filled in a legitimate way via like iTunes and then other services.
Because that was the rub. That was a real issue. The conversation was framed around fraud and piracy, but it was really about convenience. Unbundling the requirement for me to pay $20 or more for a 20-song album when I really only want to listen to 3 songs, and I wanted to do it from the convenience on my computer. So iTunes builds a business model around that because that's what people wanted.
Right. And what the record industry was saying was legitimate, right? Like, it was infringement. It was, right, all the things that were happening with Napster. It wasn't fair to artists. It wasn't respectful. But it was also an opportunity. That was an interesting thing for me to be 21 and learning so much about copyright and having my eyes opened in so many ways about like the necessary regulations and cultural norms that need to be in place so that artists are respected. And at the same time saying, well, wait, here's this thing that everyone wants and why shouldn't they have it? Like, this is not fundamentally disrespecting an artist, for example, giving consumers the ability to consume music on demand. So why isn't that being built? And if you see that it's so popular, I wasn't a student of economics, I never went to business school, but it was still clear to me at 21 that something had to give and that a legitimate version of Napster or some kind of marketplace had to emerge because there was just too much consumer demand for it.
That's an important framing for this conversation, because where you went with the piece is that this current moment that we're in, especially the past year, 2023, there's so much discussion about everything happening in AI, everyone being concerned about, again, protecting artists' rights, protecting the rights holders. But as you framed it, this is not a Napster moment, because that was about demand for something that wasn't being met. And this, while the technology is very fascinating in a lot of ways, and there is demand for certain things, the demand isn't quite the same.
Napster can be described music on demand. Again, today we are like, yeah, okay, whatever. We all have streaming platforms. But 20 years ago, that didn't exist, right? Just being able to say that in a couple of words, music on demand, immediately you can see what a huge market opportunity that is. If I say to you instead, create any music you want, like a text prompt, I just don't feel like it inspires the same. It's sort of an abstract concept. How many people are wanting to create music versus consume music, right? So already as a starting point, we're talking about very different things. Napster at its height, I think, had some 80 million plus users on a monthly basis. I would doubt that any of the generative music systems have anywhere near a million monthly active users. There's a couple of things I think when we talk about AI, because AI is everywhere in the industry. It's been like used for a long time for a whole bunch of different things that people don't even think about as being AI, no matter how impressive technically or not, are just kind of banal back-end necessary components to the industry functioning or to a consumer listening experience, for example. So we first need to be really specific about what kind of AI we're talking about, and then whatever follow-on questions we might have, whether it's training data or what the end use is, how that affects artists and so forth. And I think a lot of times that specificity is lacking in these conversations. And then the second part is, I think we need to decouple what is technically impressive and could be problematic, maybe in a vacuum, from what are practical, pragmatic, likely implications of that technology. You know, the generative music systems, I mean, it's very impressive from a technical point of view. Audio is really hard. If you think about the progress that's been made on text and image and video, you have to maintain a sort of narrative arc or consistency. Minute one needs to relate to minute two. Then there's lyrics. What do you do about lyrics? It's a complicated task. And what has been built and what has sprung up, and particularly in the past 6 months, is definitely like very, very impressive. At the same time, again, it's not the same thing as saying, get all the music you want on demand. And I think what sometimes gets lost in the breathless headlines around generative music is, what need is this filling? How many people need this? And how well do the current systems do at meeting that need? And will these things exist almost as standalone things devoid from other kinds of creation tools or other kinds of consumption tools?
Let's take a break for this week's chart metric stat of the episode. In April 2023, Grimes became one of the first commercial artists to allow her fans to use her voice in AI-generated songs. Grimes AI is the artist name that her AI voice is released under for all of its music. The most popular song, Cold Touch, by Kido and Grimes AI, has now been streamed over 1.7 million times on Spotify. Let's get back to the episode. And this is a pattern that we've seen even before generative AI became the hot topic for the industry. A few years ago, we had similar conversations about Web3 and NFTs. And similarly, there's this common pattern of technology that is in search of a solution. A lot of these things are great. A lot of these things are cool. But what is the use case? What is that thing that people are clamoring for?
I think what can happen, particularly out here in the Valley, is that people get very excited about a technical idea or a solution that in a deck, for example, you can say, well, we can all have a current ledger to track everything. And guess what? You know, the music industry, for example, it's run by a lack of transparency. And now we will solve all of that. And, you know, and then you get millions of dollars thrown at you. The problem is that at the same time, there's the reality of what's actually needed. And so you do see that disconnect of the technical prowess of what's being done, the intersection of that feat with a larger narrative around that technology. So music and crypto, for example, didn't exist in isolation. It was at the same time that a whole bunch of other things around Web3 were happening. And people were very swept up in that across multiple verticals or industries. But at the same time, if you talk to people working in the music industry, for example, just because you can now track on a ledger, that doesn't actually mean you can track the asset, right? I can go ahead and say that you're going to get royalties, like N% of royalties on something every time a song is remixed. But if you can't actually track and you don't know when that song was remixed, which you don't because all that metadata is lost once it's taken into a digital workstation, you've lost the ability to track and your transparent ledger is not connected to what happens in that DAW. And that's just one example, right? But I think it's one of those things where what happens in isolation on the theoretical level is quite divorced from the practical level. And I think we see a little bit of that with the generative music systems where it's super cool on like a novelty level to be able to say, create like a country song with a calypso flair in the style of Dan Runcie's Trapital. I have no idea, by the way, what that would sound like. That's interesting that that could even exist in the world. At the same time, what is that output? Is it natural for me to create a song with text? And how is that text or that prompt interpreted, right? It's such a subjective thing. Are people clamoring to do this? You know, I think those are all very valid questions.
This challenge too speaks back to people likely trying to replicate Steve Jobs as well, because his whole mantra was people don't know what they want yet. You need to be the future seer and give them what they want. It's something that I think probably won't change anytime soon. But I do think that there are plenty of companies and products out there that are trying to meet the demand where it is. The other challenge, though, I think is some of the media narrative around this, because people are desperate to compare it to something they recognize, which is why I think you likely framed this. But it also makes me think of all the buzz that happened in spring of 2023 when the viral Drake and Weeknd song comes out and the headlines around that and the quick response. In many ways, I think that the reaction to that clouded some of the discussion around what this actually looks like and where the opportunity is, because people saw it as a repeat of, oh, here's someone that is taking Drake and the Weeknd's voice to make it what it is. And that's very true that that did happen, and there's rights holders that should be respected for that. But it's not so much that that song is going to replace either of them. That's more giving fans the opportunity to experiment. And just because we hadn't seen an experiment like that before, it went viral. But how do we take a step back and think about how this can be an additive thing to help everyone and not just something that is taking away?
I think you almost want to think about it in three buckets. One bucket is creation, another bucket is consumption, and then the third bucket is the intersection of those two. Let's do this to start with consumption. I don't know, and I'm not sure anyone knows other than Spotify and the streaming platforms, how many uniques were there on those streams and how many of those streams were repeats. I think that's actually a really important question. At the end of the day, what do we want to consume in terms of entertainment content? It's stuff that we like. It's stuff that we think is catchy. Maybe that song was catchy. Maybe it wasn't. Everyone can have their opinions. But fundamentally, a lot of the stuff that's being created that's fully generative, and that song was not actually, right? Like there was humans in the loop and it involved a lot of curation. The whole 100% AI was a clever gimmick, but there wasn't a generative system at that time that could create something that sounded as good as that. I would say even now it would fall short. But like that doesn't matter. Let's just say it could. Let's say that AI could today create that Drake Weeknd track and have it sound the way that did and so forth. How often are we seeing those kinds of songs that are so catchy that that all of a sudden is becoming the thing that we're listening to, that that is displacing the other kinds of music that we're listening to? There will be songs like that. There will undoubtedly be some great AI track that we all think is great. I think it's more that AI will be a workflow tool. Then you move to the next bucket, which is creation, which is, it's one thing for me want to mess around with a track and play around with it. Again, that doesn't necessarily mean that all of a sudden I am getting rid of Taylor Swift from the top 10. Probably not. But now let's talk about the third bucket, which is the part that I think is really interesting. On this podcast, you and Tati from Media have talked a lot about fan engagement, right? And one of the things that the Media research has shown, the increasing attention being paid to fan engagement and how fans are very focused on creation and fandom. You know, fans consume more music, they're also more likely to create music. And I think that's actually where something like generative or AI or software, whatever you want to call it, becomes interesting, because we now have tools, generative or otherwise, that allow people to remix, speed up, throw themselves in, karaoke, create lyric videos, create things that are essentially an homage to artists, the same way that back in the day with like the Bomb Squad and all of the early days of sampling, that was the same kind of thing that was happening. Again, the tools are different, but this is already happening. I think you now have the opportunity to be able to do things that allow these things to scale in ways that weren't possible a few years ago. So while there's this panic over some of this, I actually think that you are now going to be able to see new things emerge that allow for much greater control, distribution, tracking, and so forth.
And currently, we are in this tug of war with platforms that want to enable this type of thing to happen, whether it's sped up tracks and things like that. But then there's also the pullback of rights holders wanting to protect those tracks and being concerned about, okay, well, if the sped up track gets streams or plays or consumption over this, how does the compensation work? All those concerns are valid, but there has to be a way to work this out. It reminds me of a lot of the conversations that happened 10 plus years ago when they were trying to figure out how best to monetize YouTube with Content ID and making sure that fans, creators that wanted to insert a video into there, whether it's a YouTube video or now we see it in any short form video platform, the technology was made that possible, and then the rights holders get compensated for that. And I would like to believe that there is a future where that can happen too, looking solely at the audio piece of it, whether it is sped up, whether you add your synthesizer to it, you want to take out the bass here, add it from this other song. All of those things feel like they're possible, and there's a way to figure out the compensation in a way that works. And as you put in the piece, whichever platform can figure this out in combination with rights holders and everyone else is likely going to be the winner in this regard.
What becomes really interesting is when those systems intersect with more classic or things that are happening totally outside of the generative space around recreation or co-creation. If you are at YouTube or Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, of course, what happens today? So a fan creates a remix, they do a sped up track, or they take their favorite artist, maybe mash it up with something else, or they talk over it, or they do some kind of commentary alongside it. They do some interesting visuals. Maybe they take the lyrics, write them by hand, go and then try and create like a mini, not a lyric video, but like a lyric snippet, right, of just the chorus. They do these things, they upload them to the platform, depending on the level of change. Meanwhile, if you had this, the tools of creation and distribution and tracking all happening in the same place, that changes things, doesn't it? Because then if Dan Renzi has, you know, has a track and I'm creating with Dan Renzi's track, because the creation is happening on the platform, all that metadata, everything is there from the start. And whatever happens to Dan Renzi's track after that, like it's very clear what's happening. Not only that, if you hated what I did, right? If I was trying to do some kind of crazy vocal cloning thing, either those tools wouldn't be there to allow you, or the tools would be there to block you, or they would allow you a takedown mechanism. You can get quite sophisticated with all this. But yes, there's already been a lot of lessons learned from UGC generally on the platforms that could be applied here. And I think that you can talk about these things, monetization, distribution, control, all kind of together because they're sort of connected. Who wins in kind of the next phase of fan creation is going to be the person's deals done. Can get those deals done and build the right UI that really speaks to what fans actually want versus what tech people think is clever.
Getting these deals done definitely feels like a timely topic, just given a lot of the negotiations happening right now between rights holders and streaming platforms. But also makes me think of who's going to be most likely to win in this setting, because you have a few buckets where you have the existing social media platforms that do enable certain type of creation tools that already have some agreements in place with the various rights holders. You also have the more music creation platforms itself that already combine some of that creation consumption in that bucket. I agree on what the winner looks like. It's just, it would be interesting to see where it ends up being. Is this something that fits natively within one of the social media platforms? Is it more on the creator lens? So it could look a couple of different ways.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the large platforms have an advantage in this and that they are already able to do all those things. Everything I just said, monetization, paying out, control, those are all non-trivial tasks.
This is just a portion of the conversation that Jessica and I had. And if you enjoyed it, I encourage you to check out the full essay that she wrote as a guest piece in Trapital. We have a link to it here in our show notes, but we also have an audio version. Jessica was kind enough to read the essay aloud so that you could listen to it on the episode as well. We have that coming in a second, but I do want to reiterate one of the points that she made. The ability to have a platform that can combine creation, distribution, and monetization together and enable this fan engagement is key. That's how you're able to have these building blocks on top of each other. And I do think that the work that she's doing specifically at AudioShake and some of the partnerships that they have with different companies, being able to separate stems into its different components, that's a version of this. And it's been really cool to see. I'm excited to see how this space develops, especially as the industry is investing more and more in this space, because I do think that 2024 is the year that we stop using superfans purely as a buzzword and a jargony thing and actually lead to some practical business opportunities that can push this industry forward. So let's go back to Jessica and hear the essay that she wrote in full on this topic.
Is generative music really the next Napster? Why it's going to take a lot more than a text prompt to kill music as we know it. It's hard to find a corner of the internet these days that's not having a heated conversation about artificial intelligence, and AI media in particular. Although AI has been used in the music industry for several years for features like playlist recommendations and metadata tagging, it's generative AI that has fueled most of the conversation this past year, with worries over voice deepfake, unlicensed music training, and an onslaught of algorithmically generated music, fueling fears that we're headed towards a future in which artists are replaced by bots. As debate rages, the number of generative music tools only grows. The past year has seen the release of numerous new models, including Google's Music LM, Facebook's Music Gen, Future versus Gen 1, and most recently, Suno. With each new release, a new achievement is unlocked: the length of clip generation, output in higher resolution, and most recently, the ability to create lyrics to match the generated song. Many in Silicon Valley have hailed these developments as exciting breakthroughs. Others in the media and music industry have suggested we're on the cusp of a Napster moment. While it makes for a good headline and there are legitimate ethical concerns around some aspects of generative media, we're still far off from Napster. After all, Napster made it easy for consumers to get what they wanted, music from their favorite artists on demand. No need to drive to the CD store and hope the album you wanted was in stock, or wait for a specific song to play on the radio. Yes, Napster's product was built on the back of infringement, the same argument that is made against generative AI. But Napster's success was because it addressed a market gap. When it launched in 1999, there was no legal alternative for downloading a vast catalog of music on demand. In contrast, how many people are clamoring for purely generative music? At its height, Napster had something around 80 million monthly users. So far, we haven't seen the same level of demand for generative music systems, which currently allow users to type in a request, like trap lyrics with a chipmunk voice, or fast-paced EDM track with female vocals sung as if underwater. As one tech bro recently tweeted, "Maybe I'm weird, but to me it's useless. Library and production music already exists, so what problem exactly are the current generative music systems solving?" An impressive technical feat is no guarantee for mass adoption. And if there's one thing humans have proven from the start, it's that we like to create and express ourselves. Push-button creation loses its novelty pretty quickly unless we can find a way to truly make it ours. And no one has fully cracked that yet. For generative music to cross into Napster territory, or to take a more positive view, to have an iTunes moment, it will likely have to intersect with what people are actually clamoring for, which is to engage with their favorite artist's content. Consumer research by Midia Research provides some clues as to why this matters. People who create music consume more than twice as much across various activities, from watching audio and video interviews to listening to song remixes. And for younger generations, music consumption often involves some form of creation. They aren't standalone acts. As creation becomes easier, thanks in part, but not wholly, to AI, this blurring of consumption and creation will likely only increase and pull in even more consumers. That's why there likely won't be a single transformative moment for the music industry, a technological leap that suddenly upends everything, no matter how impressive. Instead, the future is an acceleration of what began over a decade ago with song covers on YouTube, and what has continued in more recent years via short-form UGC platforms like TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube Shorts. In the near future, generative music and other software tools will combine forces with powerful distribution and community features to allow fans to engage with their favorite content like never before. Generative AI will be a part of this, but it will only be one of many mechanisms, and not an end-all be-all. The winners here will be the platforms that let people unleash their creativity, figuring out the right knobs, filters, and buttons that let them create playfully and in a collaborative way with software, just like we've been doing with Instagram filters for years. Some of those tools, like authorized voice cloning, will be generative. Others, like stem separation or genre and style switching, will be completely different types of AI. And some of them won't involve AI at all. And by the way, a few years from now, as the rules and regulations around AI, training data, and permission firm up, probably not going to talk so much about which of the categories any of these tools fall into. Consumers will just call them icons, filters, and software. Fans will be able to edit the track, taking the guitar out of one rock track and replacing it with a ukulele. They'll be able to easily remix, transforming a country track into a reggaeton mix. And they'll collaborate with other users to build something entirely new. Perhaps they will add in their own singing vocals, transform those vocals into something that's funnier, wilder, or simply better sounding. And they'll be able to build, mash up, edit, and splice with the same simplicity as happens today with image and video. And because creation will be happening on the same platform where distribution and tracking occur, rights holders and artists will have more control than they currently do and will be able to benefit monetarily if they choose to participate. And will artists choose to participate? My guess is that many will. Part of this will be generational, with artists who grew up on TikTok and YouTube more likely to embrace the chance to get closer to fans, particularly in ways that could be tracked and paid out, with mechanisms for takedown of content they don't like. And while I would never bet on the music industry paying artists more, it's possible that with creation, distribution, and tracking all living on the same platform, recognition and payouts for unauthorized recreation and remixes, which are notoriously hard to detect and are already rampant on UGC platforms, could increase artist revenue. In other words, while much of the debate around generative music focuses on topics like artist displacement, 100% AI-generated tracks, or whether a system is trained on Taylor Swift to then output a Taylor Swift-esque song, what fans really want is not to replace Taylor Swift. It's to engage, recreate, duet, and build on top of Taylor's music, expressing themselves and their love for her. Because creation, interesting and engaging creation, has always been a conversation between the artist and the world they inhabit. It doesn't happen at the push of a button or the single nod of a bot.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.